You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
I witnessed Noodles attacking the Coke machine outside the studio. I just want to pass that on.
Like, things literally stole my quarter.
Machine took my quarter.
I've had enough of that machine out there.
I hate like, these machines.
And you know there's cameras, but I'd like to scissor kick right through it.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Brian Hayes and Dave Festchuk are the star in here. Leafs in action tonight. They're in Jersey taking on the Devils. Noodle's going to have that call on TSN 4. We're playing a lot of Rolling Stones today because it's Keith Richards' birthday. And I guess I made a flippant comment in the previous hour that has pissed off someone in particular, and I could tell this guy plays the drums. Because we were talking about the Stones still going on tour, right? Mm-hmm. And someone wrote in and said they're on tour this upcoming summer. And I'm pretty sure Charlie Watts, who's been their drummer forever since day one, I think he retired. He may be coming out of retirement. But I said you can replace the drummer.
Oh.
And Nathan tweets in saying, Charlie Watts isn't important. Anyone can step in and do that. Oh, my God, dude, please, you have no idea. I guess anyone can just step in and be a goalie, too. I didn't mean, like, literally some plug off the street. I mean, obviously, a competent a
professional
drummer.
Yes. Drummer.
Like, you know, Bill Wyman retired like 25 years ago. They found a new bassist and kept playing. They've had how many guitarists?
I know, but I know how people are. Like, I love rock and roll. I've spent a little bit of time playing it and really poorly and hanging around people who play it better. And there are guys, like, I know some drummers. There are guys who will tell you and will argue with you to the death that the day Keith Moon died, the Who was done. Like, it's 1978. Everything that's happened since 1978 has been useless because Keith Moon was the Who. And when you listen to the Keith Moon playing with the Who and you listen to anybody else playing with the Who, you can sort of see their point.
Well, and I think that literally happened with John Bonham. Like, when Bonham died, Zeppelin didn't put out any more records. Now, they went on tour, but his kid plays now when they play. Whenever they do actually
Well, they don't
together.
Actually play because Jimmy and Robert don't get along, I don't think. But right. They've done some shows.
They've done some shows, and John Bonham Jr. was the guy playing the drums.
Right.
You know, so I'm not trying to downplay the importance. I'm just saying, you know, Brian Jones was important, and then it was Mick Taylor, and now it's Ronnie Wood, and, you know, basically it's Mick and Keith. That's the Stones. It kind of always has been.
But as you say,
in my opinion,
even now that great old Keith is 75. Is Keith's guitar plugged in? Who knows?
Who knows?
And who cares, frankly?
Right.
You're not going there because the musicianship is going to be top notch. You're going there to see the greatness that was.
Yeah, it's
not
about
the greatness
history.
That is.
Exactly. It's you're paying for what was as opposed to what that's going to be tonight or tomorrow whenever you go and see the Rolling Stones. But the boss man down here sent me an email with an interesting hypothetical poll question because that has been kind of the go-to move today. More likely to happen in the next 5 years, Keith Richards makes it to 80 years old or the Leafs win a Stanley Cup.
Ho, ho, ho.
Where would you place your money, Dave?
Wow, isn't this one of the great dilemmas that we've been presented with on sports radio in some time? Because frankly, there are people who believe Keith Richards will never die, just as there are people who believe the Leafs are eternally cursed and will never win the Stanley Cup. So that's a toughie.
It's the, what is it, immovable object?
Against the irrepressible force?
Or yeah, whatever it is. I think the save money's on Keith. Like, now, I just feel he's going to cruise past 80. As much as I love the Leafs, and I think they got a real shot, it's tough to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Like, it's really difficult to do it.
I agree.
So I think the safe money's on Keith. You should probably get nods if you're taking the Leafs to win between now and the next 5 years.
Like, his genetic heritage seems to be impeccable. As Ray Ferraro was saying in the previous hour, like, can you imagine the substances that have been injected through that bloodstream? Like, it's insane to even ponder what he's been doing. As you say, he may well now be into this billionaire's tactic of having his body reinfused with young blood, which apparently is very expensive, but apparently also effective.
Yeah. It's not even your blood anymore.
No, it's young person's blood.
Yeah.
You get the blood of young people who apparently are so hard up that they will donate it in liter quantities to help old geezers like Keith.
Like Keith, if you're willing to pay for it.
Live into eternity. So
that's
you're right. Like, I don't like betting against Keith Richards. Like, because people have been doing it for how many years now? Like,
forever.
Everybody's assumed this guy was the Walking Dead. And it's not happening.
No. 75 years old today. So, you know, I I hope both happen. I hope Keith Richards makes it to 80 and the Leafs win a cup in the next 5 years, but I think the safe money's on Keith.
I think you're right.
I think the safe money is on Keith. I think that says something about the legend of Keith Richards.
And it says something about the randomness of trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
Like what you need to happen to be that one team of the 31 that ends up hoisting the thing.
Everything broke loose for you.
It's got to.
Everything over the course of 2 months just somehow broke your way.
It's got to.
Yeah. It has to at some point, but, you know, the Cubs said that for over 100 years.
Yeah, because you can get close.
You can. And the Leafs are close. The Raptors are close. The Raps are back in action tomorrow night with the Pacers in town. And to chat about the Raps' recent play, the Kawhi Leonard pursuit, the sexiness of Kawhi Leonard's free agency, even though he never is going to give you anything, he's not going to tell you anything, and trying to get a read on him is impossible. We're joined now by senior NBA writer with The Athletic. Here's Sam Amick. How you doing, Sam?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Read your piece about Kawhi and, you know, the connection to the Clippers. And obviously we saw the ESPN report from a week ago about their pursuit, and they're almost treating it like a college recruitment in many ways. But, you know, as a writer, and we deal with it every day as talk radio guys, it's impossible to get a read on Kawhi. Like, how do you go about this, trying to project what he's going to do when he doesn't give off anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, what's interesting about, you know, where we're at right now in mid-December is that, for one, A, you know, like you say, he's not going to give us anything. B, I honestly generally feel this way about 99% of free agents. There's truly nothing to give, you know what I mean? Because you've got the unknown on the court, and for the Raptors, that's the question of how far can they take this thing with him as part of it, and that's a major part of their recruiting pitch is what happens on the court. You know, and then you just add their state of mind when it's late June and you're kind of weighing the next few years of your life as a player and deciding what you want to do, what you care about the most. You've got the game, you've got the lifestyle, you've got, you know, other factors that always come into play. So, you know, this part of the process for me, I just find endlessly fascinating, and that goes for any team that's trying to go after a guy. In this case, writing about the Clippers, but again, Toronto with their own pitch. I don't think the mainstream fan necessarily realizes like just all the layers there are to the way that these teams try to get these players.
Well, you mentioned Toronto in that, and even though he's playing for the Raps, I mean, they're in pursuit of it as well. I mean, there's a constant courtship going on. Yet, obviously, the Clippers' sales pitch has been pretty well articulated. Has the Raptors' plan been articulated? Do you have a read on how they're going about trying to make sure that he sticks around?
Well, I mean, I know Masai Ujiri fairly well, respect the heck out of him, and you know, I think by and large, it's been a lot more straightforward because they've got the advantage of having him in house. You have the advantage of every single day trying to kind of foster the relationship between somebody like Nick Nurse and Kawhi to make sure that, you know, Kawhi feels like his view is being heard when it comes to the way they compete. You know, everything from that to stuff off the court, the relationship between Masai and Kawhi, trying to make sure they're in a good place. The Kyle Lowry factor, you know, I talked to Kyle for this story, and Kyle was taking a very respectful kind of hands-off approach and talking about the brotherhood among NBA players and how he's just going to be happy for Kawhi whenever he makes his decision, because, you know, it's kind of a very holistic view of the landscape. So the Raptors get a chance to recruit Kawhi every single day and to steer clear of the tampering police. That's what you get when you trade for a guy. And it really is almost a direct parallel to the Oklahoma City Paul George situation. You know, as you guys know, we all thought Paul was going to go to the Lakers. He's from the LA area, just like Kawhi. And OKC rolls the dice, they trade for him, and it's very similar to the Raptors' pitch, where they just try to sell that player on their culture and everything that comes with it, you know, in all those months leading into free agency.
Well, how effective, Sam, do you think this Clippers pitch is working so far? Because, you know, they're being very overt by sending out executives to scout both the Golden State Warriors, who obviously have a pending free agent named Kevin Durant, and the Raptors for Kawhi. You know, you had the anecdote of Lawrence Frank, the head of the basketball operation in L.A. with the Clippers, maybe trying to approach Kawhi, but Kawhi not apparently knowing who Lawrence Frank was. I mean, is any of this stuff going to make an impact on Kawhi, or is it going to be coming on too strong for a guy who's, you know, focused on trying to win a championship with this team in Toronto?
Well, I mean, fair questions for sure. And I felt like one of the misnomers of the narrative, you know, that was tricky to write, admittedly, was the idea that their approach is aimed at getting Kawhi's attention. You know, Deadspin's going to be Deadspin, but they had that headline that said, you know, the Clippers are trying way too hard or whatever they said to get Kawhi Leonard's attention. That's legitimately not the focus of their plan. Now, what's the nuance here is that, do I think the Clippers have a decent level of optimism that they have a really good crack at Kawhi? Yes. And so with that comes the fact that they want to be 100% prepared whenever they sit down with him to paint a picture of what the roster might look like in the kind of way that's going to suit his talents as well as possible, and then everything else that they're going to pitch. This is all homework. This is all research. And it's not – the relationship stuff is happening on the periphery, and that means – you know, people around Kawhi and certainly, you know, teams pushing the envelope in terms of let's learn about the way he's wired, what makes him tick from all the people who can't get us in trouble. But talking directly to the player about what you want and the fact that you're interested in him, that is tampering 101. And that's why, just to be clear on the Lawrence Frank anecdote, I mean, that was happenstance that those guys were sharing the same space. And it was fascinating, though, because Lawrence did sit there for a half an hour knowing everybody who rolled by, Clippers and Raptors people alike. And then when Kawhi came by, certainly he and I said hello to each other. But Lawrence didn't know him. And I think that actually speaks to the fact that, you know, they're just doing homework right now and not necessarily kind of waving a big flag saying, hey, Kawhi, look at us.
With Sam Amick, senior NBA writer with The Athletic, any other teams out there besides the Raptors and the Clippers? You know, everyone's got those two teams so focused on. But, you know, the Knicks are going to have some space. I guess the Nets will have some space. The Lakers are going to have some space. Where else is your focus at when it comes to Kawhi?
Yeah, I mean, my focus is probably on the Lakers, although, you know, and at least, again, as we sit here talking in mid-December, I'm going to buy in to a certain degree to the chatter about the idea that Kawhi likely wants his own operation, you know, which is to say not necessarily to be co-stars with LeBron. I do think that's likely a real thing. You've been hearing that for a long time. Now, those other teams you mentioned, you know, they got space, and bottom line is Kawhi is either, you know, number one or number two on this free agency list, and it's kind of 1 and 1A between him and Kevin Durant. So any team with space is going to be coming after him. You know, Kevin is got the longer resume when it comes to just years of service and a guy who's been doing it for longer than Kawhi. And I also think, you know, that you've got a marketability to Kevin. I mean, he's got a brand and a pop that Kawhi can't necessarily sell at this point. So Kevin probably gets top billing, but Kawhi's right there. And any team that's got space and is trying to turn things around is going to be coming after him. We don't have clarity just yet, you know, on exactly which of those teams are going to have the door open when it comes to Kawhi and his people and who they want to entertain. But, you know, it does right now feel like, you know, kind of a Clippers, Raptors, Lakers situation.
Great stuff, Sam. Really appreciate you doing this, man. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
There's Sam Amick, senior NBA writer with The Athletic. So that's still, I mean, we got to wait until July until anything happens, unless these guys sign before then. But
that's the problem.
That's the NBA in a nutshell.
That's
man.
The NBA. Look, did anybody know until what it was 7 p.m. on July 1st of this year when we were all doing the Tavares dance in Toronto that LeBron was going to L.A.? Nobody knew that. It dropped and people knew suddenly. Like there wasn't a ton of hints that was going to be the outcome, although there were certainly people who were saying L.A. was the destination. I mean, I think it's going to be even more veiled with these two guys, with Durant and Kawhi, because you know, there's just a million people in their heads. And there's, as Sam Amick points out, there's so much going on in the periphery when you talk about the people you need to know to get to Kawhi, you know, his advisors, his agent, his uncle, and all the rest of it. Durant's got that type of circle around him. There's so much hearsay. You can hear. It's amazing how you can hear people who've been around the NBA a long time will tell you this is definitively going to happen, and then someone tells you the exact opposite the next day, definitively.
And both completely connected.
Yeah.
Also, just swinging in the dark.
Totally.
They have no idea.
But that's because they're just analyzing, you know, flippant comments from players, flippant comments from agents, the kind of the whim of the day, mm-hmm. right? Like, what does somebody say Yeah, what will the whim be out of Kawhi's camp if the Raptors go on a 6-game losing streak? Nobody can make a shot around him like in Denver the other night. Suddenly the teammates don't look so good. Suddenly, you know, you're not as happy with the situation. Meanwhile, if they go on a 10-game winning streak where everybody's making threes and they look like a world beater, you know, everything. Of course, he's staying. We're going to be seeing that roller coaster all year.
Yeah, there's two extremes here, and they're going to be on both ends.
Yeah.
All year. Any surprise that Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are still free agents?
Isn't it something?
And I know that there have been a couple of teams that have been linked to both guys, but I still feel like there is nothing guaranteed with them either. You know, it feels like the Phillies are really going to kick tires, but I saw Steve Phillips tweeting this morning that when Harper was set up in Vegas, the Phillies didn't even go talk to him.
Yeah.
Like, they just never, like, I guess Boras set up shop and said, anyone that's interested, come by. Doesn't have to be formal. Come say hi. You know, if you want to pitch, you can pitch, I guess. And the Phillies were like, no, we're good.
Yeah.
So, you know, that if that's an interesting strategy if they are all in on the guy and they didn't even go and say hello to the guy in Vegas. You know, the White Sox are a team that are linked, but they've been so bad for so long that I know they did the scorched earth rebuild.
They did the tank.
I don't think they're ready to compete just with the addition of one guy this year. And then there's the Yankees, you got the Dodgers, you got the Red Sox who are really quiet right now, but and I don't even know where these guys would play because those teams are so, you know, specifically Harper. And right, he's not knocking Mookie Betts out of right field in Boston.
No.
Or Benintendi out of left or Jackie Bradley Jr. out of center.
There's no fit there.
I don't know where he's going to play.
Their outfield's too good. There's no fit there.
So
there's no fit there.
I don't know what's going to happen with Harper and or Machado.
Well, and then there's the layer of what happened to Machado in the playoffs. He certainly didn't raise his stock. Now, do you?
That was one of the dumbest comments in history, to go on the record. I appreciate how, you know, it was refreshing and it was honest. But for you to come out and say it's not in my DA to hustle and to run out plays.
Weird.
Like, how is that? How can you possibly think that's going
to
help you?
When you're a pending free agent.
Right.
I mean, it made no sense to me. I mean, you talk about how do you turn off any fan base on the planet in 3 seconds? You say those words.
Exactly. And I would think an owner who's about to hand you over, what, $250 million?
Yeah.
Why would I believe that you're going to put in any effort after I pay you this money?
That's what I'm saying. And I think we've just seen it in baseball. Like, these contracts are so big, the risk is so high. You understand why teams are trepidatious about getting... Because you don't want to get into a Tulo situation. Nobody wants to write $38 million checks for things that just don't work out. You know, with guys who just don't want to hustle anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who may be a little over the hill and just don't have it the way they used to have it. And look, Tulowitzki is an extreme situation. No one's saying that's happening to Bryce Harper or Manny Machado tomorrow. But you know what? There's so many variables in baseball now, man. And it's such a fine line between being a great power hitter that produces and a guy who just doesn't have the bat speed anymore. A couple injuries here and there. And, you know, who knows what happens? But it's a mysterious game. And what we know is that teams are a lot less willing to enter into the fray on those types of numbers if they're not sure.
And these are big, long-term deals. Now, these guys are a rarity because they're 26 years old when they come up. But you look at Albert Pujols, you know, Pujols signed that monster deal. He can still put up some numbers. And he's had a couple of big years recently, but he is not what he was when he signed that deal, clearly. Miguel Cabrera is a real problem in Detroit.
Yeah.
Like a real problem. He's got years left, that huge bank.
And he fell off a cliff.
He's just not who he was.
He was triple crown, man, and all of a sudden, and then into nothing.
Yeah, like, and Stanton's probably going to do that with the Yankees in 4 or 5 years, you know, potentially. Now, he was still a younger guy, too, when he signed his deal. But, you know, and listen, the Jays, if everything breaks the way the Jays believe it can and believe it will with Vladdy Guerrero Jr., you know, that is going to put this ownership in a very different position, a very unique position, because this Blue Jay team just has simply not had that many highly touted prospects. You know, you go over the history, at least over the past 20 years, you know, when Delgado came up, and that's even more than that. That was early 90s.
Yeah.
You know, Vernon Wells was a guy who was pretty highly touted. There have been a few of them, but not to this extent. Not like the unanimously accepted number one prospect in baseball, a guy where it's been a storm brewing, where you're waiting for this guy to hit, and there's a real chance that in 6-7 years, this guy is legitimately the best player in baseball, or real close to it. And we've always posed this question, and we've done it now with Shapiro, with Atkins, we did it with Anthopoulos and Beeston, we did it with Ash, and we've done it with all these guys, and we posed the question, when the time is right, will you spend the money to go out and get guys to bring them in? That's not going to be the question here. It's going to be when the time is right. Are you willing to spend on the guys that you personally raised in the organization?
Yes.
I'm not saying, okay, we need, you know, Dave Winfield to get us over the top. No, I'm saying if in 6 years, Vladdy comes to you and goes, I will only stay if you give me a $400 million contract, does this ownership have the courage to hand that over? I don't know, because they've never been in that position before. But that's what Washington just went through.
Yeah.
Like, I think Harper, you know, unless for whatever reason he decided I want out. But I have a belief, and just based on the way Boris works, if the Nationals went and said, you come back to me with your best offer and we'll match it plus $1, I think Harper would probably stay.
I think he probably would.
He's just after the top dollar, but they're not willing to give it to him.
And he almost, I think, in a situation like that, when you're the prime guy on the market, you almost have an obligation. Scott Boras feels an obligation to the Scott Boras Corporation, of course, which is his primary concern. But you feel an obligation to just test the market, because if you don't, who will? Right? You have to test the market when you're Harper. And so that's. But you're right. Like that's where it's heading here with Vladdy Guerrero Jr. He's 19 years old. He got time.
Way too early.
It's way too early.
But if he projects the way he's supposed to.
But when you look at the grander. Like when you look at the grand arc of what's happened in the Shapiro era, it's a valid question, because all that's happened is, you know, they came in, Shapiro and Atkins arrived, they allegedly scolded, you know, Alex Anthopoulos for emptying out the farm system to make a run, which everybody in town was in favor of making a run because of the 22-year drought and the fact that there was so much pent-up demand for success in this city, not just in baseball, but in every sport. And it worked out wonderfully and nearly could have been better. And, you know, they had a shot at being a World Series team, and it just didn't work out. So they've come in and scolded him for that. And what have they done since? They've torn down. They haven't built. And, okay, they're tearing down, but is the intention to tear it down and then build it back up, or is the intention to come in and run a really tight business ship? Because when Shapiro was brought in, he was touted not as a baseball guy, but as a business guy who would modernize the operation and improve sponsorships and, you know, improve ticketing, things that fans really shouldn't care about, not improve the baseball club.
No, well, and look what's going on in Cleveland right now.
Right.
You know, like they built up, and credit to Shapiro, and Atkins had a much lesser role, but he was still involved.
Well, he was there.
They built up a team that has just dominated the Central, probably the weakest division in baseball for the past 3 or 4 years. But nonetheless, they ran away with the division every single year and with homegrown talent.
Yep.
But now, even though they keep going to the playoffs, they just traded Edwin.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a sense of belief. There's been rumors out there. If you want to call up about Kluber, he's available.
Yeah.
If you want to call up about whoever it is, because they've hit a point where they've said, okay, that's enough. We're not going to spend on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to believe that won't happen in Toronto. I don't think it would happen to the extent of a Cleveland budget, but
you wouldn't think.
The public doesn't have any say in it.
But it's also going to depend on what kind of success they have in building around Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Because, you know, as we know, baseball teams can't be one-man teams.
No.
You know, you need it takes a lot. It takes a youth movement, not one youth.
So, absolutely. So, youths.
Yeah, exactly.
It's years away from being achieved anyway. If everything breaks the way they hope it will, you know, just... Listen, this front office can be pretty deceptive, and they don't tell you much at the best of times, but their actions this offseason have told you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
They are expecting this team this season to be awful.
Awful.
And to be incredibly young and raw. And I think people will accept it. I think people have been kind of pining for the past couple of years, because these past 2 years have essentially been write-off years.
Well, I think people have been tapping their watches going, when's the rebuild going to start?
Let's get rocking here.
Shanahan laid out the blueprint of how to handle the PR around it, right? You're just honest. You say, hey,
exactly.
We have great young players coming up here. There is no point in us pretending to contend. Hey, Theo Epstein showed you the way in Chicago. A million, you know, how many franchises have copied him?
Houston did it.
Yeah, Houston did it. The White Sox. I mean, there's a long list of teams that have looked at that model and said yes. And the Blue Jays, for whatever reason, well, we know the reason, because Shapiro has articulated the reason. He felt he owed it to the fans to continue to put an alleged contender, and I'm using air quotes, on the field. Mm-hmm. And we know that wasn't going to work. It didn't work. And what happened? The place emptied out.
Yeah.
Even though he was trying to do it to keep people in.
Which is an interesting question. And obviously we have the answer now in terms of what ended up happening. People just... They were allergic to the Rogers Center last year. People are like, I'm not going to see this. But if somehow they still showed up, how different would the message be this offseason?
Be interesting.
If somehow they filled that place up with, you know, 2.8 million people, almost 3 million plus, even with whatever they had, 72 wins, 74 wins, I don't know if they could be fully committed to scorched earth.
Like, no, it might have proven Shapiro's point.
Yeah, like if we keep telling people that we're in it, they're actually going to buy it.
Like he might have won Business Executive of the Year yes. for messaging. Right?
Look at what we sold these people on.
We sold these suckers crap, and they kept buying it.
But Toronto is, you know, they weren't suckers.
No, it's too sophisticated a market. I mean, he misread the market, yeah. And that's why Shanahan's been so smart. Shanahan's, you know, managed expectations beautifully, and he's never talked down to people in the way other executives have come into town and talked down to them. And I think Shapiro's made that mistake too many times.
Yeah, and you look at their, I was looking at their 40-man last night, or what projects to be basically their 25-man breaking camp. It is, they haven't signed anybody. They haven't done any, they're not going to. Now they're just looking for they're going to have guys on the cheap. They got to fill out their rotation and, you know, but there's a chance it's going to be Stroman, Sanchez, Sean Reed, Foley, you know, Thomas Pannone, like it's
oh, there could be a parade of guys you never heard of just rolling through
and,
town.
You know, their bullpen, there's not much depth there. You look like they are really,
which is fine.
That's what you are,
which is fine,
and that's what you have to be right now. But
my thing
is, it is going to be an
again.
Ugly year.
You second guess the timing of it. It could have been done earlier. It could have been done quicker. And then, you know, maybe you're not worried about what's going to surround Vladdy Guerrero Jr., which to me is the major concern. The major storyline for the next year, 2-3 years is, what does this guy have around him as he blooms into the superstar they hope him to become?
Yep, absolutely. Leafs Devils tonight in New Jersey. We'll start teeing that up. Taylor Hall expected to play tonight. Do we expect the Leafs to bounce back? Because their effort recently has not been stellar. I mean, they're in a bit of a slump right now.
We bet.
Dave Feschuk from The Star in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. All right, the Leafs are in Jersey tonight, taking on the Devils. The reigning MVP will be playing tonight. Taylor Hall returning from injury.
Brick City. It's what they call Newark, New Jersey.
Newark, New Jersey.
Brick City.
Yeah, we were down there for the draft. That would have been 5 years ago now. That was the Freddie the Goat draft. That was Nathan MacKinnon.
That's right.
What a draft that turned out to be. And I guess it was to be expected. It was a pretty hyped draft. But MacKinnon went 1, Barkov 2, Drouin 3, Seth Jones 4. I think Monahan went 5th or 6th. Like there's 5 guys right there that are legit studs in the NHL.
Yeah, and they're those guys are all really coming into their own. Like, you're right. That's a hell of a crop.
Yeah, that is a good draft.
I mean, Rasmus Ristolainen's right in there at number 8. He's looking pretty good for Buffalo, especially with the other Rasmus in town. Mm-hmm. That's a nice blue line they got there. Max Domi also.
Yeah, Domi went like 12th, and he's a player, obviously. And yeah,
Freddy the Goat at 21.
There's Freddy LeChivre sitting there at 21, waiting for the Leafs. And I don't believe he'll be playing tonight.
You know, it's so funny when I was that mom's trip. I was on that mom's trip, and I caught a little bit of the back and forth between the players, and it's so cute because Freddie's. You know, we all like to make fun of Freddie, but for his, you know, sort of his wayward career path as a first rounder. But the moms love him. He's the sweetest guy, and he got a new haircut, and every mom was like going up to him, Freddie, you look so cute, Freddie. Oh, and he's such a charming young lad.
Yeah,
you
know, he's a really good guy.
He's got a real gentle soul to him, but I think maybe the gentility is not what most GMs and coaches want to see from a man who's 6'4".
Like, he is a moose.
He's
like,
a big man.
He is a massive individual, and if he had a mean streak, it would really do him a great service.
It wouldn't hurt.
He'd be playing in the league if he had a mean streak.
Yeah, but he is like the sweetest, like, he's every mom's favorite guy on the team because he's like the nicest guy on the team.
Yeah, that's not, you know, that's not exactly,
it's great. I mean,
it's not a bad thing in life.
His mom should be proud. She raised life. I said to his mom, you raised a nice boy. Every mom loves this boy.
Everyone loves Freddie the Goat. William Nylander did an interview with That's Hockey with Gino, and he was asked, you know, do you have any advice for Matthews and Marner, who now they have to deal with their own contractual situation? And he said, my advice would be to get it done before the season starts, which I find quite rich, because I would have to guess someone probably offered him the same advice.
Yes.
And he flushed it right down the toilet.
Well, every ex-player in the history of ex-players was telling him that. Like, just get it done.
Get it done.
I talked to Curtis Joseph at his book launch. I just tell him to just get it done. Just get it. And Curtis held out for an entire year one time, you know, when he got traded to Edmonton. Donnie Meehan was trying to negotiate a contract. He went to Vegas, played in the International League for a year. You know, well, he couldn't work out a deal.
Yeah.
And Curtis was saying, just go, just play. Yeah. It's not going to go well if you don't play well. If you don't sign soon, you're not going to have a good year, which actually may be prescient words. Like, you know, five games in, it's not looking so good. How much patience does Babcock have with him before his confidence gets hurt? And when his confidence is hurt, can he bring it around? This is a kid with supreme confidence, you would think, but everybody's human, and when you get off this slow start, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think Babcock, you could read this both ways in terms of how he's handled Nylander, because when he first got here, he threw him right into the lineup, more or less. He didn't play in that Buffalo game, but he played that, was it Detroit, I think, was his first game? I can't remember. And he put him on the top line. You know, he said, all right, you're back. We're going to put you where we wanted you to be in September when you were supposed to be here for camp or whatever, and he sat in the third period, and naturally, he didn't have it in him. He wasn't ready to go. But since then, you know, you could look at it as he's protected Nylander because he's moved him further down the lineup. But also, he's not going to grant him any preferential treatment just because he got his contract and because he's, you know, the supremely talented William Nylander. So I think Babcock is actually played it pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, he's played it pretty well because I was thinking about that with the Nick Nurse fine and how he stood up for Kawhi Leonard. I think that kind of puts him in a position where he's got to do it for somebody else at some point this year, too.
Yeah.
At some point, you can't just be the Kawhi Leonard show. You know, if Lowry feels like he's being cheated, you better take that $15,000 and be like, I got to double down for Kyle.
Although Kyle does it pretty well for himself.
He generally does speak on his own behalf.
Kyle will yap and yap and yap to the
police. But you know what I mean? Like, or at least you got to get teched up a few times or something.
Yeah, you do.
It can't just be, I only want to make sure that Kawhi feels comfortable.
That's a really good point. I think that's solid advice if you're in Nick Nurse's ear anytime soon. Mention it next time he's on Overdrive.
Yeah, so I'll make sure to point that out.
I think, you know, it's a decent calculation. Because if you're right, if the rest of the locker room just feels like this whole season's geared toward one guy, impressing one guy, wooing one guy, catering to one guy, that's not good for team.
No, that's how you lose a room.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing with Nylander, where I think it's a coincidence for the most part that they've struggled a bit since he's been back. But I think it is human nature that it was hanging over them. As much as they said, we're not thinking about it, you had to. He's a teammate. He's a very good player. You know, all these guys came up together. They're all close.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, now he comes back, and all of a sudden there's a ripple effect in terms of who's playing where and how many minutes you're getting. So, you know, I think it's not outlandish to suggest that maybe that affected their psychology a little bit, but eventually they need Willie to get going. You know, they need Nylander to get going.
But you know what tonight is? Tonight's the 12th day
since
he began. The elusive scientific 12th day.
Yes. So you're expecting a big night out of William?
Well, that's what the science, as Babcock likes to call them, the science project. The guys in the sports science department say 12 days is some kind of magic number where you get your game legs come back.
Well, I think you look at Nylander, and he is due for that. You know, he put up some
I thought he looked good in the last
Carolina
game. And he was good. He looked good against Florida. Like, he had the breakaway.
Yep.
You know, Luongo made a nice save on him. He had some serious chances. Like, it was the first time you saw him sort of show a bit of separation speed.
He's too good of a player.
Yeah.
Like, he's and these guys, you know, they don't spend their off seasons eating poutine and doing keg stands anymore.
Kid, not
like,
this kid. He's
no,
a goddess.
They are machines.
I mean, a god. I should say, I was going to say an Adonis.
Yeah.
He's an Adonis and not a goddess. Although, you know.
Hey, it doesn't matter anymore.
You know, it's exactly. I'm not gender specific on this. Everybody can look good, you know.
Yeah.
Just be comfortable in your own body. But yeah, this dude is he's
a machine.
He's chiseled.
Yeah.
He's chiseled.
And, you know, Matthews has gone quiet recently, too. Like, Matthews is due to really break out. And this kind of reminds me of his rookie season where he went 10 or 12 games without a goal.
Yeah.
Remember, he potted two in the first in Jersey.
That's
and
right.
I was like, all right, here we go again. It was right around this time of the year, too. So I'm kind of looking at those two as a potential breakout. But there was some self-awareness also from Nylander in the interview with Gino, even though it probably didn't apply during the contract negotiation, where he did point out, he's like, we haven't got through the first round. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot of hoopla about this team, and a lot of it deservedly so because of the history of the organization and the build-up and how talented they are and how good they are. But when the dust settles, you do look back on it. They haven't won anything.
No.
They have not achieved anything.
No.
And they're aware of it more than anybody else. It's their lives. It's their careers. But, you know, all this pressure on management to dole out all this money and all these expectations when they haven't achieved anything.
And that's the nature of it. And you look at this division format, like, you could go a lot of years without achieving anything. You win around and you get the privilege of playing the Tampa Bay Lightning in round two, you know, in all likelihood, right? All the percentages point to the idea that if you happen to win, and that's if you finish, you know, without a wild card, right? So if you finish in the top three in the Atlantic, man, it's not fun.
No.
It's not a fun division to be in right now. You got to hope that, you know, Chara just hits a wall past 40 and just can't do it anymore. You got to hope that Patrice Bergeron, the man who's, you know, played with, you know, various organ damage and, you know, he's got another serious injury this year. You got to hope that he, you know, he's not some sort of immortal and can just keep playing through his 30s with all the bumps and bruises he's endured. Because if those guys are actually able to come back this season and be effective,
which I'm expecting, tell you that that's exactly what's going. Like before Bergeron went down, he was having one of his best seasons.
Yeah, but it can't last forever, man. It can't last forever. But you're right. Like,
he's 33. It can't for him for a while.
Hey, man,
I think
you're right. There seems to be a fountain of youth on the market that Tom Brady's dipped into, that Alex Ovechkin's dipped into, that maybe Patrice Bergeron's dipped into, that is allowing these guys to have way more longevity than they were used to. And maybe there's just the genetic outliers, the guys that just can do it. Like,
yeah, they're freaks.
They're just doing it in a way that most people can't do it. And Bergeron, I guess, yeah, he's only 33, but man, he's been through a lot.
He's been through a lot. But the support staff, right? He gets to ride shotgun with Pastrnak, who, you watched that game against Montreal last night. I mean, this kid
he's
a spectacular player. And Marchand is probably doesn't get enough love because of his reputation, but he is also an immense talent. You know, Boston still, they are just as good as any of these big teams, I think, when they're healthy.
Yeah.
Like, I really do. I think, you know, Tampa separated themselves in the regular season. You know, I think come the postseason, the Leafs can win a series
against
them.
They don't have, it's funny to hear Babcock today talk about how people say our team is fun to watch, and that's nice. But when they say we're a machine like to watch, did you hear that quote?
Yes.
You know, and that's who Babcock is, right? Like, John Cooper's not like that. You go down there, John Cooper pre-game's like, you know, we traded a lot of chances last year. It was sort of like a gunslinging, last one to shoot is going to win the game. And we're probably giving up less chances this year. Like, he's the anti-Babcock.
Yeah.
Like, he's not trying to play lockdown, leave no doubt hockey. He's happy to just let his talent speak for itself up there. But can you win in the playoffs doing that? Well, he's got to a cup final. He's never won. You know, it'll be an interesting. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm crossing my fingers that we see that matchup in round two.
I would love to
see it. The Leafs finally get through the round one, and we get to see those two teams in a playoff series, because it'll be an incredible contrast between the way they play hockey.
It will be. Hey, it'll be the definition, I think, of new aged hockey in many ways. Because even though, to your point, Babcock would want to see a certain fashion, maybe the Leafs buy into it more in the playoffs. I think they have to. You have to clean it up a little bit. And I think even Cooper would admit to that. You know, you do have to clean it up.
Sure.
But the idea of those two teams just trading chance after chance after chance, I hope it doesn't get cleaned up too much.
Well, that's, you know, what I, that's
like
my
5-4 like, back and forth.
Like, I want to see more John Coopers in the league. Like,
yes.
I like coaches that look at it that way. Let's allow the talent to decide it. Let's not make this about my coaching tactics. Let's make this about the beauty of the players on the ice and the way they can move this puck and shoot this puck and skate like the wind. And that's, you know, I want to see more of that if I'm in the league office too, because I think that's what sells.
That's exactly
what sells. People get excited about that stuff.
Yep. Time now for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. Over the number in the Buffalo-Florida game tonight. I'm on the Leafs. They bounce back. They pick up a win tonight. Under the number in the Edmonton game. Throw down 20. You can score 90. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Leafs Devils will tee it up next. All right, the Leafs in action tonight down in Jersey. Taking on the Devils. Raptors back home tomorrow night against the Pacers. And sounds like Kyle Lowry may not play tomorrow night, but Norman Powell is going to be back, and I think Siakam should play. Fred VanVleet should play. It's all good.
It's all fine.
It's all fine and dandy.
That's a deep team, baby.
Yeah, they exactly. I mean, the fact that they pushed the way that they did, and I know they ended up losing by 10 or 11 in Denver, but it was a pretty close game. They went ice cold to start the fourth, but
couldn't make a shot. They basically did enough to win that game if they make even a third of the open jumpers they had. I mean, it was just unconscionable. Now, I do think it's going to be an issue, a lingering issue with this club as we get closer to the trade deadline about, do they have enough shooting? Because, this is a league where you can create all those open looks, but if you can't knock them down, like if CJ Miles can't be your guy and OG Anunoby can't be your guy, the list starts to get short.
Yes.
Like you can't, Fred VanVleet can't make them all.
No.
Kyle Lowry can't make them all.
That's you know? The position of need. That is, it's glaring. And I know, you know, rebounding is something that comes up a lot with this team.
It doesn't concern me as much.
You need someone that can catch and shoot.
Yeah.
You have to find that.
You can't have enough of those guys.
No. All right, Dave, great seeing you, man. You're back in here later in the week, I believe.
Looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Good seeing you. There's Dave Feschuk of the Toronto Star. Noodles will be back tomorrow. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.